There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners and macabre murders from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the Desi Patel. And it's season three, people.
We're back. It's been a long time. It feels like an awful long time.
I know. It's been but 3 weeks. That's it.
Yes. It feels like a lot longer.
But we struggled through so many obstacles in that time. We fought COVID.
We've overcome monsters, and we are back here today recording a lovely episode.
For season three, 105 episodes.
Indeed.
How are you, Nick?
I'm all right. I'm quite looking forward to getting back into it. So a break worked well.
That's why we need it every now and then. We love doing the podcast, but every now and then we need to rejuvenate and refresh our brains.
And not see each other for at least a week.
Yes. And then we just like text each other, what are you doing? I don't know what you're doing. You found someone else? You found another podcast. Oh, it is good to be back. And thank you to everyone who has been messaging us, sending us good wishes and lovely thoughts and things to entertain us. And also gifts as well.
Yes, indeed. We've received something delightful in the PO box, which is very exciting. We also say thank you very much to Devaney, who has sent us in some delightful poisonous cabinet hats.
Hats! We love a hat.
A splendidly knitted hat as well. Now, unfortunately, the hats have arrived just as the UK has gone through a massive heat wave.
Doesn't matter. We're still going to wear the hats.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's very kind. And
really
very
kind. They are wonderful knitted hats. We'll share some pictures on social media, but they have our little slogan in there. Knitted in, the precision with which she has done this. Devaney, you're a legend. If anyone wants to send us other things, nice things. We can't stress that enough. Our PO box is on all of our social media channels, or just scream at us through social media and we'll tell you what it is.
That'll work too.
That'll do it. Like, any poisonings this week, Nick?
I mean, there have been so many.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Absolutely. I mean, too many to mention now.
Well, I mean, we've been to New York. We've been poisoned ourselves with COVID. Yeah. So we've done a lot.
There's an awful lot been going on. Pick out just the one poisoning case, and all that is a tall order, I feel.
We went to New York and poisoned ourselves with bagels and cocktails.
Many bagels. Many cocktails.
Oh, it was a good trip.
Because it seems like another lifetime ago that we were there.
Yes, when we were over there, we picked up many, many recipe ideas.
Ooh. Oh, yes. Went to some fantastic places. Got very carried away and cocktail equipment shops.
Yes, we did.
which is brilliant, with the most stoned man in the history of the world behind the counter.
Oh my god.
Yes. Hilarious.
Went to a place that was recommended by some people on the podcast to pick up equipment and bitters, place that stocks amazing bitters. We got some of those, but the guy was off his
tits. Was hilarious.
Just did not blink and was staring, going, "That is so great," to everything we were saying, like, should you be handling money right now? But we did. And also realized that me and Emma are not the sort of people you should travel with, because every time you're going, should I spend money on this, we're like, yes, absolutely.
Buy everything. So
you only live once. Come on, Nick, spend all your money. Oh my god, he's really doing it.
I really am. I'm spending all my cash on shiny new copper things.
Marvelous. Well, speaking of spending all your money on shiny things and stoned people staring at you in the streets, I think it is time for us to thank our delicious new Patreon subscribers.
Indeed, and there are an awful lot of you, because we haven't been doing this for a while, so thank you very much. We must start with Susan Pryor.
To Sarah Jane Hazeltine Nesbitt.
And to stop paying MPs lecky bills.
To Spark Hazel.
Amy H.
Kit Saunders.
Tracy Leonardson.
Stephanie Dickinson.
Julie. and her mighty pooch, Rafferty Hare of the Dog Nair. This is the best name in the history of the world.
Indeed. Tracy McRobbie.
To Annie Fazaza.
To Christina Peak.
And thank you so much to Taylor Johnson.
Thank you, you beautiful, beautiful people. Thank you, lovely, delicious Patreons. Thank you for joining us. And also loving the fancy names that people are putting in. They're absolutely creeping in every week, a few more. I quite like Sarah Jane Heseltine Nesbitt. Sounds like a fancy lady.
Very, very fancy. Very
She's
fancy.
Been to Nick's special finishing school. But she did well.
She did well, absolutely. Better than me.
Indeed. And Rafferty, Hair of the Dog, Naya. What a wonderful pooch. I'm glad he listens to the show.
Oh, quite.
Well, Nick. Are you ready to drink cocktails and talk about poison?
Well, we haven't done it in a while, have we?
Or could drink poison and talk about cocktails?
Nah, let's start as we mean to go on, I feel, for season three.
Go with the first one?
Go with the first one.
Yes, now we're back with season three. We're going to start with a bang. We're going to start with some fun stuff, some facts, a little delve into history, as well as a lovely, delicious murder, because that's what you'll all hear from. But, of course, we can't possibly have any stories or any chat without a cocktail in hand.
Most certainly.
As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, that will flavour our cocktail of the week. My story is my pick, and this week's secret ingredient is... green.
Now, I want it on record that you have chosen this ingredient of entirely of your own volition. There has been no persuasion or bribery or anything untoward going on in the choice of this secret ingredient.
Yeah. Fear I have walked into a trap.
Yes.
That I have built.
Which you only have yourself to blame for.
Yes, I will be hoisted by my own petard. I think we all know what's coming. The rumbling truck of
approaching.
It's just coming over the hill. I can see. I know what's written on the side of that truck. Yeah. I know what's coming. But green.
Green. Also, green is a lovely colour. I like green. My front room is painted green. Mm. Lots of lovely things are painted green.
It is a wonderful colour. Yeah. Also, it allows me to go, could it be a nugget of purest green? Very niche reference to certain British comedy fans there. But yes, green. It's gonna... I am not just going, something was green in this story, and then just putting it in there. No, there's a very specific kind of green that I'm thinking of that will become clear very soon. But green. With green as your ingredient, your inspiration, Nick, I dare to ask, what have you come up with for season three?
I thought it would perhaps be unfair of me. As we know, I'm a lover of green things. To sort of pick your poison, as it were.
So
Sinead, we're going to play a little game.
What? I didn't know this was coming.
Now,
okay.
Before you, there are three mystery cards.
There really are, and he stamped them with the logo. Oh my God, I love this, and I'm terrified at the same time.
You will pick.
So, we know one of these cards, I hope only one, could have the horror that is green chartreuse on there.
We may all get through all three of them by the end of the episode.
That's true, But, you're making me choose my own fate.
I'm making you choose your own fate.
Or choose the manner with which I die.
Choose the manner of which you die.
ooh, the pressure. Okay, I'm going to go with this one.
Okay.
All right, do I pick it up? Do I read it? Okay. It reads, absinthe makes the heart grow fonder.
There we go. That's what we're having.
Okay, absinthe we can cope with. Oh, I have to read the story. Shit. God damn it. You don't mind. You're just
No, I'm right. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, absinthe makes the heart grow fonder.
Well, that is what we shall have.
Yay! Do I look at the other ones? Can I look at the
other ones? Well, it is up to you. So we can save one of them for later.
Oh, okay.
When you feel a particular gap in the story, perhaps you can go, I want that one. And we will see what the other cards reveal.
Okay, well, let's start with the absinthe, mix the hot grow fonder, and let's see what happens. I think it is high time for us to get into that poisonous cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
So, Nick, absinthe makes the heart grow fonder.
It does.
And the mind insane.
And the mind slightly crazier.
It has been a while since we've had absinthe.
Indeed.
We don't have it a lot.
No, there's reason for that.
Absinthe has a peculiar effect. So, I fear for our sanity. But yes, it's very pretty. It's pink. So, I wasn't expecting a pink drink.
One thing's green with absinthe.
You do think the green fairy.
Green fairy, which is why I opted for an absinthe drink, but this is very much not green.
Okay, cool. So it looks pretty. Cheers.
Merry Christmas.
First poisonous cabinet cocktail of season 3. Oh, there's a lot going on there, Nick.
There's a lot going on there.
Oh, what's happening?
I don't like that. I don't like that.
Look
much.
On your face. Oh, and it's got an aftertaste that I'm not in love with. There's a lot going on, and it's slightly nothingy. I don't know whether
you agree. That's a disappointment. That's a disappointment.
That's a disappointment. Yeah. Are you just doing this on purpose, so I have to work my way through the cards? If no. I was disappointed, or if I loved it, you'd be like, no, no, Sinead, it's disappointing. Card number two, card number two. Well, another sip. Yeah, it's got a lot of...
Oh, I can taste the absinthe now.
Yeah, I can really taste the absinthe now.
I didn't get that in the first mouthful, but that's there now.
The second sip is better.
Yeah.
Because you are getting the complexities of the absinthe, but no. Yeah, it's making my mouth do weird things.
It's not one that's going to go on the standard rotation.
Okay, well, talk us through it. Talk us why this is happening.
There is a lot. There's an awful lot going on in this one. There's a lot going on. So we've got a base of gin.
Okay.
We've got a base of gin.
Yeah.
Then we have the absinthe. Then we have some of the maraschino cherry.
I did think there was maraschino cherry in there.
We got that. We've also got cherry brandy as well.
So oh, good God.
I mean, we are talking tiny, tiny quantities. A lot of these are like a sixth of an ounce. So very, 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 very small quantities. Campari, which is where you're getting the bitterness from. And also grapefruit, which is also where you're getting the bitterness from.
What?
And then some sugar. Not enough sugar to balance out the bitterness. No. So, yeah, there's an awful lot going on in that. There is far too much going on in that. Nearly all the ingredients are like a sixth of an ounce. And it's just... there for the sake of being there, I think. And it adds nothing to the flavour. Generally bad cocktail.
Oh dear. Two things. I think it's important that I don't finish this now you've listed everything that's in it. I don't care if there's a sixth of an ounce in there. Like, this is a recipe for disaster if ever there was one. And two, I think we'll refer back to a conversation that Nick had with me while we were in New York in a very, very good speakeasy, very well-known cocktail bar called Attaboy. And Nick was lecturing me at length about the principles behind this bar and the owners of, you don't need lots of ingredients.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two, three, maybe four ingredients is all you need if mixed well for a very good cocktail. We proceeded to drink through several cocktails.
Very, very lovely cocktails.
To test this theory. And they all bloody worked.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I think you're right. And everywhere you... And that has stuck with me. Every time I look at a cocktail list now and go, that's a lot of ingredients.
There's too much in there.
What are you trying to prove?
And it generally fails, like it has on this one.
I'm sorry.
Fair enough.
Not drink that, not because it's undrinkable. If it was not my episode, I'd probably neck it. Don't think I should finish it because it's so strong. But also, I know you have backups.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is... Two cards yet unchosen.
I'm going to make an executive decision. I don't think we can start season 3 with a bad cocktail.
Okay.
Not when there's two other runners ready to go. All right, I've got two more cards to pick. I'm going to close my eyes. This one. Why are you looking at me like that? I haven't turned it over. Oh, Jesus. What have I done? Okay, I'm going to turn it over. It just says, the Dante. And I feel like I've been handed the calling card of a murderer at a ball somewhere in the 18th century. The Dante. I'm terrified. Oh, Nick's eyes went so wide there. Oh, he's happy. Shit. Let's do it. Let's get back into the poisonous cabinet kitchen. Shake up a storm. See you in a minute. And we're back.
Again.
Okay, reset on the cocktails.
That never happened.
I may regret what's going to happen.
Yeah,
now.
You may well do.
So I don't think there's any point in waiting. Let's just dive in, Nick, and enjoy it. Welcome to season 3 for you. Okay.
Oh, now that's more like it. How can you not like that?
You don't even know what's your cocktail. In it. No, you know what? I know it's in there, and I don't know what else is in there. I know there's freaking green chartreuse is in there.
Is that the only thing you're getting?
And limes. And the limes are good, and like you get a nice citrusy, but then that bloody green chartreuse is just clambering over everything. Every now and then the bloody green chartreuse comes through. And if you're not into green chartreuse, it's like a dagger in your heart.
Oh, it's so nice. So lovely. Oh, that's tasty.
I will give you that it is really citrusy, which is much better than some of the other green chartreuse cocktails I've had. which is the lime almost. It's trying to overpower it. It's not working. It's approaching drinkable, but it's not.
Approaching drinkable. That's, in that's one what of those... we love to hear about drinks.
I'm not going to waste a drink. I'll get over this in a week. You know what? As a green chartreuse-based cocktail, which I'm sure it bloody is, if it isn't, this has all just been a monologue of nothing.
Showing your prejudices. That's what it is.
It is. Like, yes. And suddenly you turn the mirror around and the mural monster is you. Talk us through it, Nick. Talk us through it.
Okay. There might be a hint of chartreuse in there.
How much?
A third of an ounce.
You bastard.
A third of an ounce in a glass that big.
Yeah, that's still too much.
There's tequila. You like tequila.
I do like tequila.
And there's lime. You
okay,
like lime.
Nice.
Some sugar. You like sugar.
Stop telling me what I like.
And then a new thing.
A new thing?
That we have not had before.
Okay.
We now have a third of an ounce.
Okay.
Of Metzendorfkümmel.
Have you had a stroke?
Nope. Metzendorfkümmel.
What?
It's another sort of Central European herby liqueur type thing. It's based on caraway.
Oh, caraway.
Yeah, it's based on caraway. And I've
don't
I've,
mind a caraway
yeah,
seed.
I've come across it in a number of cocktails, but I thought, nah, I'm not buying a whole bottle for that. But I thought, on this occasion, I thought, I will buy a whole bottle of that because it annoys Sinead. So I did buy a whole bottle of that. And it's in the cupboard for future use, which is great. Something new in the cabinet, which is quite exciting.
Do you like the way you sort of turned into an Irish mammy there going, you like tequila.
You liked it.
You like it. You liked it in a minute ago. Or if you didn't know what was in it, you'd be yumming it up,
exactly.
Wouldn't you?
Exactly. That's exactly what... I should have put some red food colouring in there. You'd be knocking it back.
Why red food colouring?
Or any... So it's not green, so you wouldn't see the green.
What? If I've drunk green cocktails before that didn't have green chartreuse...
And you
I'm
threw them
five.
All in my face. Yeah, exactly. That'll confuse her. Yeah. She's a simple lass.
Dazzle her with colours. I will give you, from my humble opinion, for which you care nothing of...
This is true.
It's a far, far, far superior cocktail than the first one.
Okay, I've absolutely agreed.
Because, what, four ingredients?
Four and a bit of sugar. Four ingredients and a bit of sugar.
And a bit of sugar. Nicely balanced. I can tell that this is a good cocktail. It's not to my particular palate, but it's got very nice subtle flavours coming through. Unfortunately for me, the subtle flavours are just like, I'll kill you. Whereas you are just like, your taste buds are singing, there's dancing in the street, bluebirds are flocking around you, happiness. As a chartreuse cocktail, it works.
See now you make me feel bad, because I feel I should have been nicer on this third and final cocktail.
What?
And made something you might like, but no, fuck that. You chose green.
And you're just punishing me. Well, with our Dantes, the Dante, firmly in hand... Well, Nick firmly in hand,
yep.
Just dancing off towards the gates of
yep,
hell.
I'm
me
going.
Being dragged, going, no, there's a trick here. We have cocktails, we have backup cocktails that are bad, but still, see how we go. Are you ready for some stories, Nick?
I definitely want a story.
Hooray, hooray, hooray. Well, to start off season three, we are doing a little bit of a double whammy. We, of course, have a classic tale of murder and mayhem for you to enjoy. We're also going to have one of our much-loved, much-talked-about, and much-discredited history asides.
What do you mean much-discredited? How dare you?
Well, in my case, I knew you would say that. I was typing it, and I knew Nick would take umbrage here. Insert Nick's shot. Now, we are going to return to one of our favourite ingredients and subjects. Arsenic!
Ooh.
Arsenic alarm! Arsenic alarm! Arsenic alarm! Let's get that out of the way. As we built our content for season three, a few people started to ask us for stories about the wider use of poisons in the Victorian home, in the average Victorian home. Now, we've touched on this a little in other episodes. Mainly it's driven around the just there's poison and people died. Also, in our expert witness chat that we have with Dr. Catherine Harcup, which I heartily recommend you listen to. Wonderful writer. But this week, we're going to look at one area in particular where our good friend arsenic was prevalent. In the field of decoration, Nick.
Ooh.
So, Nick, I want you to come with me now.
Okay.
Come with me.
I will. Take me.
Okay. Come with me now on a trip through the Victorian home to see what we can find. Now, picture a Victorian home, Nick. What do you see? What does it look like?
Oh, there's Christmas trees aplenty all over the place. There's a small urchin carrying a goose. Just like 365 days a year, he's got a goose. An awful lot of servants going on around the place.
What does the home look like?
Home looks like, I mean, I think it's very dark. It's lots of things. I know the Victorian home was full of stuff, ornaments and objets.
Lots of trinkets.
Lots of trinkets and tables with doilies and trinkets and pictures and
tiny little
all
tables.
Sort of things. Absolutely. Yeah. And buckets of poison lying around the place.
Well, that's very true. Okay, so that's one of the main things about the Victorian home is that you will notice that the average Victorian home is stocked to the gills with bottles of poison. Arsenic, strychnine, phosphorus, gin. Gin's not a poison, it's just nice to have around. But for treating your ailments, clearing up your skin, getting rough on rats, and giving your love life a jolt in one way or another.
Yes. I mean, one does need arsenic for re-lovelification purposes.
You do. You need to slop off all those blemishes.
Absolutely.
But what you might not see is all of the poisons that are in the home. You won't see them at first glance. Not just because the maid has hidden them in her skirts.
It's because they're in the soup.
Stuffed into dumplings. No, they're hidden in plain sight. But the second most important thing about the Victorian home is something you picked up on. You said dark.
Yes.
Now, when we picture Victorian homes, most of us will be forgiven for thinking gothic. It's dark because of the books we've read and the films we've seen. That sort of palette. And also the association of Victorians with ghosts. And with seances, you know, this is a very spiritual, very ghostly sort of era.
I was mainly thinking, like, no electricity.
they had gas lamps.
But gas lamps, but the gas lamps are not going to be the same as, like, 100-watt LED, are they?
So what you just couldn't see, is that it? Everyone's wandering around bumping into
tables,
blind.
And they did, like heavy fabrics and things, and big chunky curtains that kept out the... Because obviously no lady could be in front of the sunlight. So there must be a continual pallor over the whole building.
Well, the thing about the home is that while it may have been dark because of the lighting, the colour palette was incredibly bright.
True.
The fact is, the Victorian home was becoming resplendent with colour in terms of its decor and because of its designs. The vogue at the time was for vibrant reds, yellows, purples, and of course a glorious green. These are colours that would be painted on ornaments, on furniture, and the dye used to make the most exquisite wallpaper.
Absolutely.
And wall hangings, not to mention the fabulous gowns that ladies would wear in high society. And what were these colours, these pigments, these incredibly beautiful, suddenly mass-produced hues that you could douse your home in, quite literally? What were they made of?
Yes. Tell me.
You can say it if you want.
Natural things. Natural pigments.
Indeed, natural pigments, mainly from arsenic compounds.
Well, the green ones, yes.
No, red and yellow.
I didn't know red was, but I didn't know red.
Would you like to have a quick history
I would love that.
Colourful arsenic?
I did not know red was arsenic.
Oh, there you are. These sorts of vibrant colours that would have been more mass-produced would have come from vegetable dyes.
Yes.
But lo and behold, with the march of the Industrial Revolution in the late 1700s, comes a marvellous byproduct of the metal industry known as arsenic trioxide.
Yes.
Now, this is where the white powdery goodness that features in all of our stories, well, most of our stories, comes from. In short, industrialists found that arsenic trioxide was a waste material produced when smelting metal ore. Ore that is extracted from the earth, it's been contaminated by arsenic, and suddenly you get powdery goodness in the chimneys. And they realise, ooh, this is very good for getting rid of pests and getting rid of anything.
Yeah, anything, anyone, rid of it.
So yeah, waste product, we can sell this for pest control, bada bing, bada boom. But certain arsenic compounds are very brightly coloured, and they have been used for millennia. They have been used for a very long time. And you have realgar, which is ruby red, and you have orpiment, which is yellow.
I knew orpiment. I did not know the red. I have learned a new thing.
There you are. They have been used, as I said, for centuries.
Thousands of years.
But with the Industrial Revolution, you now have people able to mass produce arsenic compounds and use them as pigments and also to invent new ones. Enter a man named Carl Wilhelm Scheele.
Hello, Carl.
Do you know who he is?
I don't.
You should.
Should I?
Okay. For two reasons. He's a Swedish-German chemist. He discovered oxygen.
He discovered it.
Yes, which sounds like it's a very roundabout way of saying it, but you have to write, there's no other way of writing it, and all of the historians of the chemists are like, look, he just discovered it. Fire air, he called it. It was a very strange thing. I'm not a chemist, I can't explain it.
You don't say.
He worked out, this is oxygen. He was the first person to go, that's what this is, and everyone went, oh, okay, well done.
Well done him.
His chemical history, his history as a chemist, he's a very, very important person. But what we know him best for, probably, is that he is the man behind Scheele's Green.
Oh, I've heard of Shields Green.
Suddenly it twigs.
Yeah, it does.
Shields Green, an arsenic compound that, through a rather complex process of combining various copper solutions and sodium carbonate, produces the most beautiful, vibrant green colour.
Well, how lovely.
The green that we probably associate the most with the Victorian era, that really kind of... It's impossible to describe.
Yeah,
almost.
I know exactly. I can picture it in my head. But yeah. How do you describe it apart from that particular Victorian green?
Also known as Paris green.
Mm.
And the closest thing you could probably describe is that you've got a lot of buildings that had copper in them, and they've got that sort of
shade
of green.
That sort of verdigris sort of
exactly.
thing going on, yeah.
It's very close to that. So he invented that, and then everyone was like, I want a piece of that, yay. Mm.
It's very similar to the colour of my walls.
No, it isn't.
Is that sort of green colour?
Oh, that one. Sorry,
yes, not the white one.
I thought you were losing your mind
for
a minute.
That green wall over there.
The green chartreuse had gone to your head, and you were hallucinating. I'm in Paris, everybody. Shields Green and other arsenic pigments were all the rage in Victorian England for manufacturers and customers. Because they didn't fade. Vegetable dyes did. These stayed true. They were vibrant, and they were very, very cheap to produce. Delicious. They were so popular that they were not only favoured in their use in colourful wallpaper, but as I said, also dresses, hair pieces, dipped flowers that you'd have in the house, wax fruits, fake fruits that you had in big piles. That was very fashionable. Also used as a food colouring.
Nice, tasty.
And on children's toys.
Excellent.
So you have a home literally soaked in poison. There's no two ways around it. And when that happens, things are going to get dark. You'd think there would be loads of people would be Machiavellian and use this as an excuse to commit a lot of murders.
I ask him a lot of people a lot of credit.
People kept messaging going, there must be murders associated with it. No, in fiction, yes.
Yeah,
loads.
Absolutely.
Normally just people were starting to get quite ill. First of all, the people working in the factories, they're starting to get sick because they're breathing in or handling poison daily, and they end up falling over suffering from the effects of death.
I mean, that classic symptom.
It's a sign that something's wrong. But workers dying, no one cares about that. Poor people, meh. But when news reports start circulating about normal people in
my
houses,
God, not rich people.
Oh, yes. Suffering the ill effects of their beautifully decorated homes, the press got panicky.
Stop licking the wallpaper!
Well, that is the very thing. That is something that someone picked up on going, up, chapa. When the argument's about how toxic wallpaper was at the time, someone actually said, unless you're licking the wallpaper, it can't hurt you. Turned out he was wrong.
The snozzberries taste like snozzberries. The arsenic tastes like arsenic.
It was a very dark version.
Yeah, it really was.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory of Death.
Oh, look at this lovely mural of a lovely strychnine tree. These belladonna plants, lick them. Oh, no, they're dead.
Oh, no, they're dead. We really have to remarket this. So you do have, you'll feel bad now. You've got a couple of cases of children falling very, very ill. I think there was one death. And you've got children who are playing with their toys and they put them in their mouth. Yeah, obviously, children do. And they get really ill. And I think there was a death associated with some children in a Victorian home, and they picked up the fake fruit. So that was big in fashion. If it wasn't made of wax, wax is very expensive. But you have the bowls of the wooden fruit that are painted in these beautiful pigments. Kid picks up an apple, like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And drops down dead because there's arsenic all over it. And everyone was like, that's curious. I wonder what was wrong with him. He was poisoned, you idiots.
This is also why kids never like fruit now, from like a genetic memory of it being poisoned.
Right, are you saying all kids are connected to this one kid?
Yeah, absolutely, that's how it works.
That was the mother kid.
Yes. Science!
You questioned the man who invented oxygen, and now you've worked out kids.
Now, yeah, psychic kids throughout the years.
The children of the corn.
The children of the corn, they have, like, this is a psychic memory of the poison fruit. How these things work.
In
Moving
children.
On.
The price for fashion was even higher, Nick. Now, there's some brilliant books that are out at the moment about fashion that kills and in that era. And I'm just going to touch on it very briefly here. But you have these women wearing these incredible green dresses. I mean, these colours are staggering now.
Absolutely.
And can you imagine having an entire ball gown dipped in this sort of colour? It's incredible. There was one lady in 1871... positively preening to her friends about the box of green gloves that she had bought from a very well-known fashion house. And she had these gloves and she was going to wear them to all of the events, and she was showing them off. But no sooner she put them on, her hands were covered in angry blisters and were seeping and oozing. The dye in the gloves had not been properly sealed. Not easy to do. And she had sweaty hands because she was wearing gloves.
Wearing gloves.
Which is why you'd wear the gloves. So no one sees your sweaty, sweaty red hands. And it absorbed the poison and her hands were falling off. Yeah. Which is a bit
and she's probably going, oh, my hands are a bit rashy. I better wear my gloves.
Yes.
To cover up this. One day, takes her gloves off and her hands come off too.
It was said women were wearing enough poison to kill a room full of suitors.
Nice.
Gives a new meaning to the word slay when you're going out.
Yes, it does.
Oh, you don't know that expression, do you?
I do know that expression.
You do?
It took me a while to get that.
Slay! But, Nick, you may be wondering how wallpaper kills you.
Yeah, I was, absolutely, yes.
You were still thinking about the gloves that tear off your hands and those psychic kegs who know so much.
Yeah, they know all the things. Keep them out, keep them out.
You're just going to go to sleep rocking back and forth thinking about that, aren't you?
Every time you walk down the street, there's a kid looking at you. No, he knows! He knows the secrets.
Well, folks who had bought the very latest fabulous wallpaper from William Morris.
Oh, absolutely.
Delightful. And other manufacturers were available. Seemingly William no Morris one was and to others. Talk about it. That was William Morris, and then everyone else was like, Mr. Morris, can we ride on your coattails? Mm. They found their homes were mercifully free of pests.
Yeah,
there were no bed bugs.
Nice.
No fleas. Even the rats were keeping away. Oh my God, this is wonderful. They must know this is a house that is
it's a fancy
too respectable.
House. Absolutely.
Too lovely. But then when people start collapsing, there are problems. Again, this is not all at once. I don't want to give the impression that there was suddenly a mass tidal wave of people just all fainting in the houses and everyone, oh, we must do something. No, this is over a very long period of time.
True.
We have people who are making flock wallpaper.
Mm.
So you know flock wallpaper?
I do know flock wallpaper.
Velvety, lovely
well.
Texture.
No, nicely strokeable.
Yeah, stroke the furry wool. Beautiful pattern.
Why does that sound rude?
It's from a film. So these are beautiful patterns where tiny bits of wool fibre dipped in the dye are stuck to like a fleur-de-lis or early version of paisley or anything like that. And they are stuck on your wall. So the workers who are doing this are just breathing in fibres constantly. But yeah, oh, they're workers. Screw them.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
But in the home is that if you brush against the paper, the fibre's going to be released.
Absolutely.
You can breathe them in. So all these comments about licking the wallpaper. Oh, you can do that. No, just brushing against them. Flock wallpaper, releasing arsenic. But the real problem is that even if you don't have furry wallpaper, if the wallpaper or your walls or your house became damp and then mouldy, which was very likely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very, very likely in the Victorian era. The mould reacts to the arsenic. It creates mould. Mould tries to fight the arsenic. It does, literally.
Okay.
And in fighting it, it releases a gas.
Excellent.
Yes. So this gas, this poisonous gas, is seeping out of the wallpaper as the mould and the arsenic fight each other to the death. But some people said it smelled of garlic. Some people said it smelled of mouse.
Nice.
Yep, garlic. Likely that it was garlic. People maybe had never smelt garlic before and said, this smells like a mouse. What? But yes, you have this toxic gas being released by the wallpaper, just being wallpaper, into the home, and it's inhaled. And so terror is starting to ripple through society about how deadly one's home is. Queen Victoria had all of the green wallpaper in one room of the palace taken down after a visiting dignitary fell ill while staying there.
Oh.
So Queen Victoria's talking about it, then everyone's like, oh, scandal, scandal, scandal. You've got chemists and industrialists and certain people going, wait a minute, maybe poison isn't the best form of decoration.
Maybe not, maybe not. Not the best marketing message to send out there.
Indeed. Did it stop anyone? No, absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
No regulations on poison being used in dyes. We barely can have a regulation on it being sold to people who are clearly standing there sharpening a knife.
Absolutely, yeah.
As I will detail later. But using dyes in clothes and decor, oh no, it's fine. So help yourself. And everyone wanted to buy it.
Go for it.
And you do have famous designers like William Morris. Love his prints today, is beloved the world over. What I've read so far, William Morris really did not give a fuck about the people in his factory.
No, absolutely not.
Didn't visit them. Not visit them. Was one of the most vocal voices in the argument in the press from two sides, where you've got chemists and you've got doctors saying the wallpaper is potentially killing people. And the industrialist going, no. Unless you lick it, this is absolute rubbish. There's other things that are killing people. And it's like, you're putting poison into wallpaper. Stop doing it.
But it's a lovely green.
It's a lovely green.
But it's a lovely green.
Eventually, they would make, and they branded it arsenic-free wallpaper.
Luxury.
They found a way to get the pigment. And as soon as they were able to guarantee making money, going forward. They were like, oh, yeah, yeah, no, we won't put arsenic in it. But this is years. Kind. This is years, this
one. Well, it's got to make financial sense, hasn't it? You're doing nothing illegal. I mean, it's what we see today. You do nothing illegal, morally, questionable, shall we say. But it's not against the law.
Who needs of these morals?
Exactly. It's not against the law. Mm. I can get away with it. I'm going to make some cash. I'm doing it.
I think you and I can both empathise to a tiny little point of, we're like, it may kill us, but it's very pretty.
It's very nice.
It's very pretty. That's a very, very nice wallpaper. Oh, we'll get a bit sick, but we'll die in beautiful surroundings.
Exactly. We'll die a bit lovely.
So the trade in poison wallpaper would eventually stop. All you had to worry about was your loved ones trying to kill you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
But one last thing on wallpaper.
Yes, do tell.
As I said, finding details of cases of murder or death that are directly involved with wallpaper is quite difficult because they're sort of generalised accounts that are used in the press, and you try and dig and you find, trying to find details, and they're few and far between. They're very, very, like, one line or two. But there is one case that people refer back to a lot.
There's one that springs to mind, I must admit.
Yes, what's that one?
Leapt to mind. Was it a French person by any chance?
A Frenchman.
A Frenchman on St. Helena, is it?
St. Helena? Or Helena. So, yes. Was it Helena?
I thought I could be wrong.
Yeah. Who is it?
is it Napoleon?
It is Napoleon.
It is Napoleon.
Napoleon Bonaparte, the death of Napoleon Bonaparte. Boney, the emperor, that absolute fucker. Yeah, he's not a nice man. But still, now, I'm not going to go into a whole history of Napoleon.
Let's not go into the history of Napoleon,
Let's not do that. There are other podcasts for that. And also, the horror. Now, at the end of his life, Napoleon was exiled by the British onto St. Helena, however we want to pronounce it.
Let's onto say, the island.
The island.
The island.
I am not a number. I'm a French bastard.
I'm a French emperor.
His home, Longwood House, wasn't in a very good state of repair. Mm. And it was reported that the British were very happy with this. Oh yeah, we want to hasten Napoleon's death. We don't want it to be comfortable. So on St. Helena, he has this house. He has companions who are with him, his guards. There is the governor of the island who does like allow him to have expenses and things like that. You know, yeah. He's sort of like under house arrest. He's allowed to host dinner parties. But he complained a lot about the conditions of what he was living in because the island was very prone to damp. It was mouldy. The house wasn't in very good condition, as I said.
Well, so, if you've been the emperor of most of Europe for a number of years, and then you're stuck in a house, you're probably going to get a bit moaning. You're probably used to the nicer things.
Yes.
In life. So.
Also, if you're Napoleon Bonaparte and you're complaining to the British are basically going to go, well, I'm going to flick these signs at you for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
Boo-hoo-hoo. Poor Napoleon. Napoleon died on the 5th of May, 1821. Initially put down to stomach cancer. Some people still think that that is the cause. But as was befitting his reputation, people also clamoured to say that there had been a plot to poison him, because he had displayed a lot of the symptoms we'd normally associate with arsenic poisoning at the end. It wasn't until the 1960s that hair samples from Emperor B were tested and were found to contain very high levels of arsenic. And this is what starts the debate. Okay, had he been poisoned? Had he been flooded with arsenic before his death? Enough people believe that he is murdered. But there are others who point to the beautiful red and gold wallpaper in his rooms at Longwood House. The paper contained high, high levels of arsenic, and the damp and mouldy conditions on the island, which were well noted, and in his letters as well, going, it's very damp and mouldy, I don't like it, it smells of mouse and garlic, I don't know what that's about. All of these conditions could have certainly produced the toxic gas that we referred to earlier. But is it enough to kill him?
Well, he's getting on a bit at this point, and he's been through a lot as well, and he's not well.
No.
So he's not at all well, so... No. Could it be enough to push him over the edge?
It's been determined...
Potentially. Kill a young, healthy man? Probably not.
No.
But... and
make you sick.
Make you sick. But for an older person who, yeah, who's been through it, he's not well anyway, and just pock him over the edge. Pock.
It's kind of relative. Wallpaper could have very well, probably did, contribute to his ill health. Maybe even hastening his death. And later research and tests found that Napoleon's body and like all the samples that they had and everything that they could work from showed that Napoleon was most likely contaminated with arsenic all his life.
This is true.
And this is where little bits of information taken in isolation can be misconstrued, because as we know on this show, there are people of certain eras where arsenic is just part of their life. They are just riddled with it and they are living perfectly happy
lives. 24 hours a day, there it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. He would have been wearing all of the outfits that had the dyes in them.
Yep.
So he would have been gently sort of been susceptible and exposed to arsenic, did not have good health all of his life, so it all adds up and adds up and adds up. So maybe arsenic is responsible.
Yeah, going to the fanciest of parties with the loveliest of green wallpapers in the ballrooms and such.
Shaking hands with green-gloved women.
Absolutely.
Who are going, ow, this really hurts. So yes, interesting note, a scrap of that very wallpaper was sold at auction in 2003... for £1,200.
That's quite a lot of money for a bit of wallpaper.
Tiny scrap.
Tiny wee bit of wallpaper.
But I think, I couldn't quite find the trail in this, but it was bought by an anonymous buyer. But I think that wallpaper was used for tests later on, and they sold it and they said, use it for tests to find out what happened to Napoleon.
That'd be quite cool to have though, wouldn't it? Bit of wallpaper from Napoleon's house where he died.
What are you going to do? Show it to people when they come around?
Just like in a frame.
Look at my poison.
I think that'd be quite cool.
It'd be quite cool.
Yeah.
And it was very red and gold.
Yeah, very red and grey fame. And from Napoleon's exiled house, possibly responsible for his death.
It's a very big plaque.
It's a very big plaque.
An extreme of consciousness.
Yeah, absolutely. A frame, like 12 foot long, tiny bit of wallpaper right in the middle. But massive thing.
So there you go. That is a little quick history.
Okay.
Of wallpaper in the Victorian home.
Of wallpapery death.
And of Napoleon Bonaparte.
Nice. Like it.
Now, I do have a story.
Oh, okay.
It's season 3 opener.
Good.
It's a bumper episode.
Ooh.
So I have a little story that does feature our old friend arsenic.
Nice.
I couldn't do this without... My plan was to talk about wallpaper, talk about shield screen. Thought, you know what, an arsenic story will be fine.
Quite right.
And then I found one, and midway through researching it, found a reference to everything we've been talking about.
Perfect.
By accident. So,
perfect.
Ha ha ha. So are you ready for a story?
Well, I don't know. Are we ready for a story?
Your hand is creeping over the little card. Season 3, 3 drinks. I think it's important.
I think it sounds appropriate.
Okay. Did I pick the last card? Okay. I'm really scared. Okay. So drink number 3. It's the poisonous martini.
This is one of my own devising.
A Nick original? It's a Nick original. But season three, yes. Oh, this is a great way to finish up, isn't it?
So I thought you...
With
you,
the whole
you,
story.
You picked wisely.
Wonderful. Okay, let's settle in for the short story that I have to end this episode, but to also launch season three with a poisonous martini. Time for us to go and shake up a storm. See you in a minute.
See you in a bit.
And we're back!
Hello again, 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 again.
Oh, Nick, the poisoner's martini. It looks so classy.
Yeah, it looks lovely.
It looks very nice. Are you also a little bit preening about your new glasses?
I'm very much liking my new glasses.
Well, these are birthday presents.
These are my birthday present from my lovely sister.
Aw, and they're beautiful.
She's bought me some lovely martini glasses.
Yeah, they're fancy.
Pretty.
And a very lovely clear-ish.
Clear-ish.
Martini.
Yeah.
Love a martini. So, okay. All right. What have you done, Nick?
We'll find out.
Green is the thing. What's he done?
We'll see.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
That's nice.
Oh, I like that. That's strong.
It's strong. I mean, fuck yeah, it's strong.
It's bold. it stings the nostrils in a good way. I like that.
Good. I'm very glad.
It's got quite a sour aftertaste. I'm not sure if that's right.
It's definitely got something.
It's got a sourness to it, which I don't mind, which I don't normally associate with a martini.
That's actually worked a lot better than I thought. I thought I made this up, and I thought, oh, it should work. It could work. And this is the first time I tried it, and it has worked quite nicely.
That's the second sip all mellows nicely. Oh, okay. I'm pleased with that. Nick, you got to talk us through it. Is it a trade secret?
No, I'm...
You're a benevolent god.
I can tell, knowing that half the people who listen to this will not be ever able to make this.
Right? Okay. Has it got your own tears in it?
No, because one of these ingredients is illegal in the United States of America.
No, what? But my brain is just exploding. Like, what's illegal in America?
Yep, is not available for purchase. Is illegal to be imported. So it starts off as a classic martini. My general preferred is like a 3-to-1 sort of ratio.
Very nice.
Sort of standard martini ratio.
Which would be
3 parts gin to 1 part vermouth.
Very nice.
But this has got something extra. So I've given this just a slight dash, a rinse in the glass.
Okay.
Of his special ingredient.
Okay.
Special ingredient that I've just bought just for you.
Okay.
This is... It comes in its own...
What?
Special wooden bottle.
What?
Elixir vegetal. De la grande chartreuse.
He has been talking about this for as long as I have known him. He said, there is a bigger chartreuse.
There is a bigger chartreuse.
There is a bigger chartreuse. It's out there.
It's out there.
It comes in a wooden box.
And
you've
I bought
fucking
some.
Done it.
And I bought some.
You have done it. What have you done? So,
now, this is actually, in America, is classed as a medicine. And it is not FDA approved. So it is illegal to be imported into the United States. So, but if you're in Europe, have at it.
Okay, can I look at the bottle?
Because it is 69%.
Jesus.
By alcohol volume.
Oh my goodness.
Which is terrifying.
So yeah, it comes in a little wooden box. Yep. We'll have to share a picture of this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great stuff.
Really, you open it up like a Russian doll, and then inside is a dusty, probably from the wood.
Probably from the wood.
From this, oh God. It's dark. Oh, very green.
Very green.
It's so green, it's insane.
So this, supposedly, I can't remember which episode it was in, but I talked about the chap who supposedly had the recipe the monk who had the recipe for chartreuse. Now, this is supposedly the original recipe.
Wow.
The green chartreuse that we know you get in a bottle is a variation that came about 50 years or so later. The yellow chartreuse, later still. But this is the original chartreuse recipe, which they still make. The monks still make it. Known to like 3 monks in the world know how to make this stuff.
Can be only one, like Highlander.
Pretty much, yeah. It's incredibly strong. It's incredibly potent.
Yeah,
it's got none of the sweetness that you would perhaps associate with the normal, the green chartreuse. None of that. It is chartreuse concentrated.
Yes.
Concentrated twigginess.
Maybe if you'd served this to me the first place, I would have punched you in the face.
So, I mean, generally they say you either have it a couple of drops. It comes with a dropper attachment on the bottle.
So it literally drops.
Yeah, so you literally have it by a drop. So they either say it is in like a glass of water, you have 2 or 3 drops of an evening as a medicinal sort of thing. Other people drink it like they would absinthe on a sugar cube, iced water. This time I've used it as a rinse in the glass.
Good idea.
But you would want no more.
No, you can taste
than
it
that
as
because
well.
It would literally send you insane.
Yeah.
this stuff.
I fear that this is going to be the thing that breaks us. I knew you put something in there that was medicinal and twiggy, but I wasn't going, oh, okay, green chartreuse. There was something otherworldly about it. And that's the only way I can describe it. I'm not opposed to it, though. You loved it immediately.
Absolutely.
I can go, but in a good martini, which you sip.
Yeah, absolutely.
After a while, you're not going to down it. That's the sort of thing. Well, yeah, I'm intrigued. The grand chartreuse.
La grande chartreuse.
The big chartreuse. Banned in America. Otherwise, you have to come over here and just going into Wetherspoons. Going to be the grand chartreuse and a Stella. Wow, you've knocked it out of the park. And truly, the poisonous martini.
Well, exactly. This is the poisonous martini.
And it is poison to some people.
Yeah.
Yes. To the FDA, apparently. Well, wonderful. With the poisonous martinis firmly in hand, would you like a little story to finish off?
I would love a little story to finish off.
Wonderful. Okay, Nick, we are at the boarding house of Mary Ann Burdock.
Okay.
Where an old woman lies dead.
Ooh.
A maid may have seen too much. And there is something distinctly off-colour with the whole situation.
Slightly green tinge, by any chance?
All the colours.
All the colours.
All the colours.
Kaleidoscope of death.
Mary Ann Burdock was born Mary Ann Williams to a labouring family. Mm. They worked the land. And she moved to Bristol when she was 19. She was looking for a good time. She was looking to be cast off the boring life of a farmhand, of a farming family. Oh, she was going to go to Bristol. Ooh,
Bristol?
Big,
it's a farm place. Yes. Absolutely. A lot going on in Bristol.
She was said to be beguiled at an early age.
Oh, aren't we all?
Destined for a life of dodgy dealings.
Aren't we all?
Now, whether people think that she was beguiled because of love interests or whether she was just a loose woman, maybe. It's not known. She was married for a time to a sailor. He deserted her. Boo. Boo. That's quite sad. Then she took up with other lovers. She drank. She had a good time. She lived a fairly promiscuous life, which was described at the time. It was not becoming of a woman of the era. She also, though, allowed other loose women to come and stay with her. So she kind of made friends in the area, gave them shelter, and kind of let them stay in her house. How she ended up with a house or her lodgings, whether it was through her lovers, we don't know. Mm. You know, but she was looking out for a sister,
yeah,
which I quite like,
actually. Yeah, I like that. Good.
But she would eventually meet and fall in love with another sailor, a man named Wade, Charles Wade. He's known as Wade.
Okay.
Different people give him different first names and also second names, weirdly, but Wade is consistent in here. And he was quite a sickly gentleman, but she loved him. They lived as common law man and wife. Mm-hmm. He was determined to marry her, but he was just too poor. Oh, dear. At some point, Mary Ann decides that she needs a more respectable business than just drinking and shagging people, potentially for money, and opens up a boarding house.
Okay.
Where she can have an air of legitimacy.
Absolutely.
Now, the boarding house maybe isn't doing terribly well. The future isn't looking too bright. Mary Ann, and she definitely needs cash, pretty sharpish, to keep her and her ailing husband and whatever her plans are for the future. When who should rock up in September 1833?
Who?
But Clara Smith.
Ooh.
60 years old.
Okay.
Widowed. No family to care for her.
Oh, poor Clara.
She has a distant brother and a nephew maybe somewhere, but no one to really look after her, not anything to her name, apart from a jewellery box and £700 in gold coins.
Yeah, that'll do it.
And £100 in banknotes. And all of these
Clara's
rings
flaunting a lot of this stuff around. Everyone knows about all this. She's going, look at all my stuff!
Wouldn't you? She turns up at the boarding house, and being an old dear, she's like, I don't trust my goods to the bank. I will keep them in my strong box,
right.
And I'm going to keep them secure in this boarding house, she's saying to Mary Ann. Mary Ann's eyes are on stalks right now. Yes, please,
and
come in.
And where do you keep the key for safekeeping?
Exactly, yes, don't you worry, dear, I'll look after you. Mm. Of course, it's not long before Mary Ann starts to take a personal interest in Clara's health. First off, she asks another of her lodgers to go and buy something to help her. Go and buy some arsenic. Deal with the rats, actually. Deal with the rats under her husband's bed. There are rats under her husband's bed, and that's not very good for
her
lodgers.
No one wants that.
No one wants that. The husband's like, what? Shut up. The lodger's name is Edward Evans. Got a little bit of PC Morris, a little bit of arsenic.
Nice.
He says, not to worry, you can count on me. You can count on me, Mary Ann. Give me the tuppence for the arsenic. Go straight out and spend it on beer.
Brilliant. Love him.
I think he is genuinely stupid because he doesn't try to lie or anything.
No, I bet on me.
He comes back to the house and she goes, "Where's the arsling?" He goes, "Oh, fuck."
Love him.
Goes back out and like gets his mates and goes, "Fucking give me tuppence. I need to buy arsling. I completely forgot." Gets, borrows money.
Spent it on beer. Brilliant.
Gets the tuppence. Goes to the chemist. "Hello, good sir. I would like some arsenic.
Tuppence worth of arsenic.
One arsenic, please." Chemist says, "No, I'm not selling it to you without witnesses because you're pissed.
And also, you're very drunk."
Goes out of the shop. Gets two of his mates from the pub. Drags them into the brilliant chemist.
Foolproof.
They're all propping up the counter. Like, "Is we can totally vouch for this man." Chemist looks them up and down. Like, "Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. The witnesses are here. Fine.
Absolutely. You two drunks give me no pause for thought whatsoever."
Absolutely not.
"The only trouble is there is no white arsenic left," he explains to them. "Would they like some lovely yellow arsenic?"
Well,
yes. Pigmented. Edward Evans said to the chemist as he's holding out the yellow arsenic going, "Is this enough?" He says, "Is it enough to poison a man?"
I mean, Edward Evans, sort yourself out, mate. Come on.
Chemist said, "Yeah, about half of Bristol this'll do." Edward Evans says, "Then we have a deal." And the chemist said, "Absolutely fine, no problem."
Brilliant, brilliant.
Off they go into the night. Chemist is like, "This is none of my business."
Absolutely. "I've got the cash, it's fine."
But Edward Evans, again, he just goes back and gives it to Mary Ann. And no conversation is had after this. He is not involved in this case. "Here you go, Mary Ann. I'll go back to the pub. Love you." So it's not long before Clara Smith starts to feel ill.
Yeah, unsurprisingly, that one.
But it's a little bit of the slight dosing time.
You can't be too blatant with such things.
You can't, you can't. What is wonderful, though, is the steps that Mary Ann takes outside of the small dosing of Clara Smith. The dutiful landlady, she makes sure that her meals are brought up to her. Clara Smith cannot come down for her meals now in the boarding house. She's too ill. So she'll take her meals in her room.
Very kind.
Mary Ann hires a neighbour's 14-year-old daughter, who's also called Mary Ann, so I'm just going to call her a nursemaid. She hires her as a nursemaid. I'm just going to call her that to avoid confusion. She pays the girl weekly.
Yeah.
Instructs her that she must never eat any of the food that is sent up to Miss Smith.
No, that is from Miss Smith.
No, that's
not
for Smith.
You.
No, you go home for your meals. So as to assure her that she's just not being tight, which you can imagine going, "No food for you, you go home." Mary Ann claims that Mrs. Smith is a dirty old woman who likes to spit and everything.
Well, that's not overly nice, is it, really?
It's not very nice. That's not true. Also.
No, I mean, it's not very nice of her to spread such rumours. Not that it's very nice that she spits in things. I don't believe she did. But it's not very nice to spread such rumours that she did.
But, like, yeah, she was thinking of, like, having little leftovers or anything. She spits in everything, so no taste.
She's very dribbly. She's very, very dribbly.
Oh, God. The nursemaid obviously thinks, "Wow, what a great gig I've got. Yay." She does what she's told.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Smith seems to be in good spirits. She tended to her over the next couple of days. She's okay. She's talking about getting up and about. She's talking about maybe moving lodging houses at some point because she just wants to move around a bit. Mary Ann Burdock keeps peering at different points, just sort of like peering round stairways at the nursemaid as she's like bringing the slops out, kind of like, "Hey, has she said anything? Has she said anything?"
She did, she did.
New instructions that she gives her. If she says anything about moving lodgings, you tell her that you don't know of any anywhere in Bristol.
No, there are none.
Very strict instructions. None of that. Also, how's she doing? Is she any worse? I mean better. Is she fine? Is she fine? One evening, Mary Ann goes up to see Mrs. Smith. And she says, "I will make you a nice bowl of gruel."
What's not to love about a nice bowl of gruel?
Mrs. Smith is literally shouting at her, going, "I don't want any gruel." "No, it's absolutely what you need. Here I go, off I go." Comes back up with a basin of gruel. The nursemaid is sort of standing there, what the fuck is going on, watching this. She's bringing the basin up to her door, and then she sort of turns and then goes into a room next to it. Nursemaid sort of puts her head around the door, and she sees Mary Ann taking out a package and sprinkling two pinches of what she calls yellow powder into the gruel. She finds very striking because it's yellow powder. What are all people are doing with that? She asks Mary Ann,
"Nice bit of turmeric, some saffron, some lovely seasonings going on in the gruel."
Mary Ann turns around, nursemaid standing there, "What are you doing?" And she goes, no, it's medicine. It's medicine for the patient. But you mustn't tell her, because otherwise she won't take it. Because she's a cantankerous old woman. She won't have anything that's given to her.
Very true.
She says this while scrubbing her hands with a brush and her nails. She is literally tearing up her skin to get any trace of the powder off. Going, it's fine. It's absolutely fine. Don't mention it to her whatsoever. The nursemaid does what she's told. Bless her, she's 14.
She's 14.
She's 14.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's getting paid. The old lady drinks half the gruel down. And mere minutes later, she is in agony. Nursemaid tries to get a doctor. Marianne Burdock says, no, Mrs. Smith wouldn't want one.
Absolutely not.
I think she's screaming for one right now. Mrs. Smith is in such pain that she is flailing around the bed. She smashes her head on the headboard or the iron stand at one point. She slips then into a deep sleep or unconsciousness. And by the morning, she is dead. Marianne then leaps into action. This is from one source of the time. After her death, she opened a cupboard and drawers and applied abusive epithets to the deceased and conducted herself in a most unfeeling manner, exclaiming, only think of the drunken old bitch having this, as she was going through her stuff.
No one likes abusive epithets.
She told witnesses never to say anything of Mrs. Smith or who she was or what she was, nor that she had ever lived with her. And if anyone asked to say that she was a stranger, a foreigner, far away in the East Indies. Nor do you ever tell anyone, she said, you saw me put anything in the gruel, for people might think it's curious.
Right, okay.
Foolproof.
Yeah. Foolproof. Remind me of the lady's name who's just like, is Mrs. Smith?
Clara Smith. Yeah, Clara Mrs. Smith. Smith.
So we're going, Mrs. Smith, the foreigner from the East Indies.
Yes.
Right, okay. I just wanted to clarify that in my head before I said that. But okay.
Absolutely, no refuting that. The morning after her death, Marianne's husband, Wade, he is seen by Edward, the drunkard who was at the pub. He's seen wearing Mrs. Smith's rings.
Nice.
At breakfast.
Excellent.
He dressed up for breakfast, which is pretty, you know.
In her frock fancy. As well?
I'm thinking he put on a full dry
full,
brunch.
Full, he went for it. He's in her heels, he's got her tiara.
I feel like Wade leaned into it a lot.
He went with it.
Ed was just sitting there just spooning in scrambled eggs going, oh, okay. Marianne arranged for a very quick, very cheap funeral, telling everyone that Clara Smith, the old lady, had died penniless. There was only a little plate left that would just about cover the coffin. And it was a cheap coffin, a cheap funeral.
Yeah.
And no one from the boarding house attended.
Oh, that's rude.
Yeah. Marianne, of course, is seen depositing £500 in the bank shortly afterwards. Also gives cash for her husband in the weeks later on. Wade himself, despite all of the fabulous frocks and his drag act that never took off, he was a very sickly man. He died a few weeks after Mrs. Smith. Now, there's nothing suspicious reported about this.
Okay.
There's no inference that Marianne did anything to him. But Marianne was very soon back out on the market, playing the well-off widow. Ended up marrying a tailor named Paul Burdock. Over a year had passed. Marianne must have been feeling pretty smug.
It's got away with this, absolutely. Yeah.
Until December 1834, when she gets a visit from Thomas Manley.
Who's Thomas Manley?
He's Clara's nephew.
Oh, that'll do it.
Mrs. Smith's nephew. He'd only just learned of her death.
Only just arrived from the East Indies.
It takes a long time.
It's a long time. It's a big old trek.
He hadn't seen his aunt for many years, about 4 years. So a little bit, I will say, of him going, you haven't seen my aunt for many years, but I heard she's dead and I'm entitled to a massive inheritance. Money, please. Money. Marianne's like, no. She didn't leave anything. She died alone. She was penniless. She's penniless like me. I'm penniless. I have no money. Don't look at that crystal chandelier. Don't look at that bottle of chartreuse. On the brink of poverty, she said she was. Thomas is like, no, absolutely not. I know I was entitled to an inheritance here. Money grabbing as it is, he does instigate the investigation. And so Clara's death, Mrs. Smith's death, is investigated. And her grave was exhumed on the 24th of December, Christmas Eve.
Nice. Yeah. Okay.
Carried out by then up-and-coming famed toxicologist William Herapath. Now, he's not someone we've heard of a lot before.
No, I'm not familiar with that name.
He was an expert in his field. He was very famous. Also at this exhumation was an undertaker, the sexton, three doctors, a coroner, quite the crowd.
Mm.
And they literally lift the coffin out and prop it up on some gravestones and then just sort of pick away at the
nice.
Corpse.
Yeah.
I think they hold up a sheet.
Well, you don't want everyone to see, do you?
No, I mean, if it's Christmas Eve and everyone's going to church, going, morning, morning, here's some viscera. There we are. As they cut into the remains, they find that they are not only very well preserved 14 months later, but the stomach and the intestines are all covered with a strange bright yellow substance that has not faded in time. And the experts conclude that this was orpiment.
So the yellow, so there must be a lot to coat the insides.
Quite all over there, all over there. The arsenic compound that is used for colouring items. So, an inquest is held. The coroner's jury found that Mrs. Smith died from arsenic poison administered by Marianne. And she is charged with murder. The nursemaid, the young nursemaid, was temporarily under suspicion.
Yeah.
She was cleared. She was brought forward as a witness. Some of her testimonies weren't included in the cases because she was so terrified of being in court, she literally fainted and had to be carried out.
I suppose when you're 14 years old and you're accused of murdering someone.
Yeah, she'd seen terrible things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's going to freak you out.
When the trial starts in April 1835, the case is called Sensation in Bristol, and huge crowds block the streets when Marianne arrives at court, and they are said to be making the most discordant yells and groans.
Oh, how rude. Not discordant yells.
Discordant yells and groans are like, oh.
If they were in tune, they were in fine.
And in court, William Herapath shows the results of his examination to the jury. He shows the yellow samples on the intestines. They're brought in glass jars. He shows the yellow on the side. And he shows how only arsenic compounds could make these colours. And he shows a sample of Scheele's green
in the court
to demonstrate how arsenic makes these colours. They even brought in her skull.
That was also yellow.
For no reason. No, it was beautifully white and said she didn't knock her head. She couldn't have died from a head injury or anything
like
that.
Okay, but then here's a skull.
It does feel like, and also here's a skull.
Yeah, here's a skull, yeah.
They've seen an intestine. They've seen the lower and smaller intestines. They've seen the whole stomach. They've seen lovely, beautiful colours and a skull. So they go, okay, right. The jury takes 18 minutes.
Okay, that's impressive.
To find Marianne Burdock, née Williams, guilty. That very much gets some sandwiches. She was hanged 2 days later in front of a crowd.
Speedy work.
Yeah. In front of a crowd of 50,000 people.
50,000. All of Bristol turned
All of Bristol turned
all
out.
All of the West Country.
All of the neighbours turned up. Oh, yes, this will be good. And she said nothing on the stand.
Yeah. Dignity.
She proclaimed her innocence until the last. But there you go. That is the story.
That's a good story. I like that.
Of Marianne Burdock, of Scheele's green, of wallpaper, of deathly pigments in that era.
That was a really random way to end there.
I know. I hadn't thought it through. Deathly pigments in the Victorian age.
Very nice.
Yeah.
That was good. I like that. A bit of history, bit of murder, many, many cocktails. What a fantastic time has been had by all.
Indeed. I like the fact that this was a case where they didn't just get the regular arsenic. They had to get the fancy arsenic.
The fancy arsenic out. That's very true, absolutely. Yeah. Well, yes, they ran out of the normal arsenic. We had to buy the fancy arsenic.
There was a version of the events where the nursemaid said that the gruel that was brought in to Mrs. Smith, after she put the yellow powder in, she said it looked red. Which puzzled people. But then people were saying, like, is she confused? Is she just upset? Is it the colour of the basin?
Her colours.
Yeah, she's not knowing. She's colourblind. That was the whole thing. But using Scheele's green as well to show this is what...
Demonstrate the range of colours that were available from arsenic.
If you think it's insane that yellow is... Exactly, as you didn't know. You know, you didn't know about red.
Absolutely.
Or anything. That if you think that arsenic can't produce these colours... Then
here they are. Oh, that was very good.
We learned
many things.
You've learned many, many things.
I like
things.
Learning things.
Napoleon probably killed by wallpaper.
Probably killed by wallpaper. That martini's gone really straight to my head.
That is a good martini.
It's a good martini, but fuck it, strong.
We've learned about wallpaper. We've learned about things that could kill you in the Victorian home. Yep. And happily, we'll delve into this a bit more if people like to hear a bit more of it. If you want to hear about the fashion, if you have other areas that you'd like us to cover, very happy to dip into and see if we can find a case that matches it.
Most certainly.
But yes, and just landladies going, oh, old women, don't turn up at a boarding house going, I have but only this big trunk of jewels.
Yes, I have only got this, all this gold, this all I have in the world, this big pile of cash. It's all I have.
Leaning into the landlady going, yep, if I died, no one would care. Nobody whatsoever. Well, good night. I do feel bad for the 14-year-old nursemaid.
I mean, yeah, she was put through it. That seems a bit harsh.
That is a tough first job.
Yeah. Also, like, the chap afterwards wearing all the jewellery.
Yes, there's so, a husband.
It's who's like, it's like, he's having a grand time.
I'm crazy, but you like that. Yeah. And also Edward, who's just pissing away all the money from the...
It's like, oh, I forgot the arsenic, sorry.
He must have been a regular thing going like, okay, Edward, did you get the groceries I asked you to? No. But I did get you this half pint. Here you go.
Lovely pint of beer.
Would you like some crisps? You still want the groceries? Okay, I'll go.
And then to beg his mates for the money to buy the arsenic.
Okay, I need some money to buy poison. We want a part of this.
His mates are outside the pharmacy going, come on! And he goes and drags them in to be witnesses. So.
They probably thought it was a great night out.
I mean, this feels very much like what we would do.
Let's go. Ole, 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 ole. Arsenic, arsenic. Marvellous. Well, what do you think, people? What do you think about the wallpaper and the decor of the Victorian age? What do you think about Mary Ann Burdock and her basically killing her lodger? There's no two ways around it.
Exactly.
What do you think about the pigments of the Victorian age? Are there more stories that we could cover on this? Mm. Any ones that you can recommend, please just send us messages. Put them in the comments of any of the social media channels that you follow. We would love to delve into this further. So we've got some cracking episodes coming up. Some really, really good ones. Again, visiting poisoning cases, but also branching out into stranger, weirder territory based on your requests.
Ooh, I've got a lot of branching out into stranger, weirder territory on the cards. Got some good old weird ones coming up.
But most importantly, do mix up two, possibly three of the cocktails that we have
made. Well, I would say one, possibly two.
Well, some people can't mix the last one.
No, but that's what I mean. So I would say don't bother with the first one.
You drank the first one.
Mainly because I'm sitting here and I really want a drink.
Had a drink in like a week.
So I think don't bother with the first one. Absinthe makes the heart grow fonder. It's bleh.
Nah, it's just a nah.
I would just say just don't bother. The Dante, great.
Lovely.
Love it. For Absolutely Nick. Love it.
Fantastic. People who don't like chartreuse, then your heart will die a tiny time.
But it's brilliant. It's absolutely lovely. Sinead's entirely wrong. The poisonous martini. I'm sorry, people in America, this is not one for you.
It's very nice.
But it's damn good.
The bigger the chartreuse.
The better the chartreuse. But if you're in Europe, have at it. It's not crazy, crazy expensive.
No.
And one bottle, I mean, that bottle there was about £20.
That's okay.
So, and it, I mean, it's a small, what's the volume?
Well, it's a really, really concentrated.
It's 100 mil, so, but that is going to last God knows how long.
Oh, God, yes.
Because you will not have a lot of that in a drink. And you can get it on Amazon.
Oh, my God, you didn't go to an artisanal brewery place?
Unfortunately, I didn't.
Producer?
No. It was from the Amazon. On next day delivery with Prime.
Nick, no!
Which I feel dreadful about, but they got it to me quickly.
This is the proper artisanal stuff. But you will enjoy it.
This is the scary stuff, but it is.
And so many of our listeners are going to be furious because they can't get it. So you all have to come to Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. Come and say hello in London. So we'll send some pictures of how lovely these things are.
We'll all meet up in Hyde Park with our chartreuses. That'll be a weird day.
Our plan is made.
Keep sending us suggestions of more stories you want us to cover in season 3. Come and join us on Patreon, a wonderful, wonderful community with loads of extra episodes, loads of bonus content, and really wonderful people where we get to chat a little bit more in depth in the comments about each episode that we do. We love to hear your suggestions and check out our merch store if you haven't already. Lots to come in season 3. Well, thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisonous cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Bye.
Hold up. Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.